So I need to know the actual frequency in order to do this, right? I need to know the actual frequency and damping ratio. How do I get that? Your boss comes up to you and drops some system down in front of you on your table, virtually or maybe physically, and says, hey, I need to move this thing around without it vibrating. Can. Give it some kind of input and observe the response. Sure, that's one way. So it depends on the system, is the kind of higher level answer. Right? So I can look at it and say, well, this is a system I know how to model really well. So you can go that route if you want. Right? Some system you may not be able to model anywhere. And even if you can model a system really well, we probably still want to do what we're suggesting is get some experimental verification of the model. So this whole process, you have some existing system. You're trying to identify its properties. We call it system ID, system identification. Okay. Look through quickly through a, I think this shouldn't take long. So I have some flexible system, and I say, well, hey, I want to give it some input and then measure what it does. What I really can do, and what I'm looking for, right, is actually the free vibration properties. Remember, the natural frequency is the frequency it's oscillating at when nothing's acting on it. Right? It's just naturally going to oscillate at that frequency. So I don't want to be forcing it at a frequency. Right? So really what I want is some, we can think about it as an initial condition response. So I have my crane, for example, and I walk up and I pull it sideways a little bit and then let it go. And then I watch what it does after I let it go. Right. So in that case, it would do something like this. Okay. So there's my initial condition response for my crane payload. Maybe that's a theta naught instead of x naught. How do I get natural frequency from this? Yeah, so I know if it's oscillating in the natural frequency, that that time has some kind of relationship to the natural frequency. What is that? Well, if you're talking hertz, for sure. So that's tau, when it's a period of our oscillation, right? So that time you can estimate the natural frequency in hertz, it's just 1 over that. Right? If we need radians a second, what is it? Okay. So there I've measured just one cycle. What can I do to improve the validity, let's say, the accuracy of this estimation? Yeah, so I would have more than one cycle in my data. I'll kind of only have 1.5 here, but I could look, you know, this part here. That should also be tau, right? Or I know that this to there better be 2 tau. All right. So if you're going to do this kind of zero crossing method of estimating natural frequency, you got to take more than just one cycle. That's kind of the point there. Right. So you want to compare up and down. You want to get n different cycles, divide by the number of cycles, and get some estimate of tau. What happens if you do that, and hey, this tau up here is different than that one? Or the one out 2 seconds later is different than this one. What do you know about your system? It's changing natural frequency. So what does that mean for the system? It could be from different multiple modes, sure. I think I heard somebody say it. No, actually not. It's not continuous. Yeah, that could. There could be some outside force that you're not accounting for. Effectively, kind of all those things can lead into some kind of nonlinearity. Right? So that frequency is changing over time. You also can use this to get an kind of estimate of your linearity of your system. Right? You need tau to be basically the same all the time if the system's truly, truly linear. Okay? So you guys asked about damping. What changes here if I have damping? All right, it's just going to decay. Frequency get period get shorter or longer? It's a little bit longer, right? For the kind of systems that you're really going to be wanting to control, or quite often going to be wanting to control, the damping will be light enough where it's not a ton of difference, really. But you can remember, if I'm doing this for a damped system, what I'm measuring is actually tau d, the damped period of oscillation, not just tau, the natural period. So you would get omega d, not omega. So if you have damping, just remember that. You're getting omega d, or fd, if you will. Okay. So speaking of damping, next few minutes... How do we figure out the damping? We need a little damping ratio, too, if we're going to do this input shaping thing. And for a bunch of other controllers, too, generally. What's that? I don't even need the frequency, I think. Maybe not the time, but we are going to use some kind of ratio. The amplitude, right? So what is damping? Damping is going to describe for us. Let me draw that damp case again. Make it it's a little bit more clear. So I start at the same place. Draw it out a little bit further. What does damping dictate for this response? Overshooting something. Well, this is a free vibration response.
So how fast it dies out?
How fast it controls the rate of decay. Right? And if you remember, that envelope has what shape? This envelope of decay for a second order system. Yeah, it's exponential. Right? So we know that this envelope here. Actually inside there. Right. That's dictated by damping. Right? And it's actually dictated by if that's T. So if we know that, right, what we're going to be able to do is kind of take these peaks of this guy, and that we can use those to get an estimate of that line. Essentially, do a curve fit on that decay envelope, and that's going to give us zeta. Right? There's some derivation of that in the notes that we're not going to have time for. So I'll walk you through the method. This is called log decrement, but you'll hear everyone call it log dec instead. In the method here, is to measure, if you have an initial position response, measure a peak. So let's say measure your first peak, and we'll just call that x at time 0 from your free vibration response. Then I'm going to go out here x of tn, and we'll also know that that is and periods later. Let's write it that way instead for the short version. Right. That time in this case is 1, 2 periods later, right? 1, 2 periods. So n would be 2 in that case. Okay. So then I can take those two things and find the sigma. And I always forget which was in the numerator. Take the natural log over that. So the natural log of our initial peak divided by the one at n periods later. Okay. And then from there I know it's 4, right? 4's on the bottom. Damper ratio is going to be that. So I can take my crane, pull its payload over, let it go. Record its oscillation. Right, so I pulled it over to some X naught, let it go. It's going to be oscillating back and forth and damping out a little bit. Right. Measure peaks. Right. Capture all these peaks. Right. And then for kind of pairs of them, do this. And what again, it's kind of tabulated different zetas for different periods. Right? If this system is linear, if I looked at these two peaks, and then I looked at those two peaks in this pairing, and then I looked at these two peaks, and then I looked at these two peaks, what should they be? They should all be the same. I should get the same damper ratio for all of them. The experimental data, you're not going to get exactly the same, but they should be about the same. If they're not, you got some nonlinearities going on. Your damping might not be, this assumes viscous damping, right? This might have more friction, structural damping, all these other kind of different types of damping that we'll talk about in vibrations if you take it. So this gives us a nice way to kind of estimate damping. Right. What's the problem with both of these? No, I can do this with just straight experimental results.
Your system is very hard to get a free response for.
So that could be a problem. I might have a system where I don't get free response and not easy to come by.
If your crane, you said hold it at a certain distance, but if that's a 10-ton mass, how do you hold it at a certain distance?
Well, not, I don't have to just have to displace it, but yeah, I could do that. So yeah, there might be some systems where it's hard.
This is based off of data that you collect.
Yeah. You may not be able to get to the data. The quality of data matters here. Right? If this is really noisy data, it's going to be hard to pick off the actual peak. Right? If this is really noisy data, it's going to be hard to pick the exact zeros. Right?
It's supposed to be in space. You're not
going
to
do it. Well, maybe. I could do this for a satellite. You'd want to do this before it got into space if you're going to do it for a satellite. This also is making one big assumption about the properties of the system so far. How many different frequencies are here in these two plots? So many modes. We're saying that either one of these methods, as we've written them so far, only work for one degree of freedom, one dominant mode of vibration, which luckily classifies a huge, huge number of systems. But if you have more than one mode of oscillation, like that kind of crane with the string vibration, these guys are going to break down for you. Right? And we'll probably end up being part of the lab, how to handle multiple modes of vibration experimentally. And we'll talk through it during that lab exercise. Okay? Because we are out of time today.